Let's begin. It is December 18th, 2023 of the Common Era. The time is 14:38 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. Today we're studying chapter 2, paragraph 6 of the Crucible of Credible Creed and 2 Samuel, as well as Jeremiah and Matthew. And of the family of Amenhotep I, also called Amenophis, which is translated Amun is satisfied, or Amun is satisfied. Wikipedia says Amenhotep I was the son of Amos I and Amos Nefertari. His elder brothers, the crown prince Amos Saper and Amos Ankh, died before him, thus clearing the way for his ascension to the throne. Amenhotep probably came to power while he was still young himself, and his mother, Amos Nefertari, appears to have been regent for him for at least a short time. This is evidenced because both he and his mother are credited with opening a worker village at the site of Deir el-Medina. Amenhotep took his sister Amos Meritamun as his great royal wife. It was usual for Egyptians to take their sisters as their wives. Even their full sister with the same father and mother, they would take that one of their sisters as their wife. Another wife's name, Sitkamoz, is attested once again from Wikipedia on a 19th dynasty stela. Now, Amenhotep I was in the 18th dynasty, so, and I was saying the other day, I just wanted to clear that up. The 18th dynasty goes on right down as far as the father of Ramesses II, according to Manetho. Oh, I was going to get the other copy of Manetho open here, but we can, I suppose we can look at it. It's very difficult to look at it in this book. Let's duplicate that tab. Excuse me for sneezing. Let's duplicate that tab here and go, if we can. That's very slow. What's happening there is very slow. Let's search, okay, on this website. How do we do that? Not sure. Search. Here it is. Here it is. Let's search for. Oops. No, maybe not. Let's see. No, I don't want to search inside. Okay, we're just going to say archive.org. Chronology of the Old Testament. Chronology of the Old Testament. Fotheringham. See what we come up with. There it is. This is the book I wanted to show you the other day. And maybe we'll get it in a two-page view here. Let's open it up and make it bigger. How do we make it bigger? There we go. Well, we just want to make it, if we maximize, maximize it is the way to go. Then we can make it smaller to fit on the page. We want the two-page view. That's good, and we just go to see if we can find it where the Egyptian pharaohs are here. Where are they? Okay, here we go. The date of the Exodus. None of the other chronological information that we find in this book is of much use to us, as is true of most of the chronological information in the world. It doesn't have any value to us. But in this book, we're going to see, I guess it's at the end of the book that where it talks about, I think it's more closer to the end where it gets into the Egyptian pharaohs. It's not going to be correct regarding the fall of Samaria or any of those things. Other than, it's going to be useful for the reference of the names of the kings of Egypt. Right? We could find out what page it's on if we went to another place. Here it is. Okay, we found it. Page 120 something. Yeah, I should have remembered the page number, but there. See, there's Dynasty 19. It starts with Seti the first, the father of Ramesses the second, right here. Sethos and Ramesses. Ramesses II ruled for 66 years. That's Dynasty 19. But at the end of Dynasty 18, there's a king called Ramesses here that who ruled 68 years, who must be Ramesses II. He's included in Dynasty 18 of Eusebius. So, yeah, he's 18 or 19. So, and Amenophis, the king we're talking about here, is right here. 21 years. He's actually the son of Amos, and this Hebron is somebody else that is out of order either, or he's a co-ruler, and some people have suggested that that's Moses even, but it's not going to be important to us. However, we were doing a study here, and we finished that study for today in the Born and Raised article. Now we better move quickly, but I think we can get finished our reading. Hopefully Proverbs 14 for today is the proverb in verse 11, little children. The house of wicked people will be annihilated, but the tent of the upright ones will flourish. And there's another thing I wanted to show you, Lamentations 3 and 30. Let him give his cheek to the very one striking him. Let him have his sufficiency of reproach. That's written by Jeremiah, which we're coming to after we finish the book of Jeremiah. Probably we'll do Lamentations, or possibly. And in chapter 3, verse 30, we see that scripture which refers to Jesus saying also in later times, turn the other cheek. Right? That's what that refers to. Very important thing to note that Jesus didn't originate anything. He was always quoting from the old Greek Septuagint, the law and the prophets of the former covenant, prior to the new covenant, which he introduced. Let's move. 2 Samuel. We're on to 2 Samuel 17. And Ahithophel proceeded to say to Absalom, let me choose, please, 12,000 men, and rise up and chase after David tonight. And I shall come upon him when he's weary and feeble in both hands, and I shall certainly drive him into trembling, and all the people that are with him will have to flee, and I shall certainly strike down the king by himself. And let me bring all the people back to you. Equivalent to the returning of all is the man whom you are seeking. And all the people will themselves come to be at peace. And the word was just right in the eyes of Absalom, and in the eyes of all the older men of Israel. Absalom is in Jerusalem. He's taken over the kingship from his father unlawfully. And this is the advice he gets from his counselor. You know, let's kill the king. However, Absalom said, call, please, Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear what is in his mouth, even his. So Hushai came in to Absalom. Then Absalom said to him, according to this word is the way Ahithophel spoke. Shall we act upon his word? If not, you yourself speak. At this Hushai said to Absalom, the counsel with which Ahithophel has counseled is not good in this instance. And Hushai went on to say, you yourself well know your father and the men of his, that they are mighty, and they are bitter of soul, like a female bear that has lost her cubs in the field. And your father is a warrior, and he will not spend the night with the people. Look, now he is hiding in one of the hollows or in one of the other places, and it will certainly occur that just as soon as he falls upon them at the start, the one hearing of it will then be bound to hear and say, a defeat has taken place among the people that are following Absalom. And even the valiant man whose heart is as the heart of the lion will himself surely soften in weakness, for all Israel is aware that your father is a mighty man, and so too are the valiant men that are with him. I myself do say in counsel, let all Israel without fail be gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba. That's the north to the south. As the sand particles that are by the sea for multitude, with your own person going into the fight. And we must come against him in one of the places where he is certain to be found. And we ourselves will be upon him just as the dew falls upon the ground. And there will certainly not be left even a single one among him and all the men that are with him. and if it is into some city that he will withdraw, all Israel must also carry ropes to that city, and we shall certainly drag it down to the torrent valley, until there shall not be found there even a pebble. Then Absalom and all the men of Israel said, "The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel." And Jehovah himself had given command to frustrate the counsel of Ahithophel, although good, in order that Jehovah might bring calamity upon Absalom. Later, Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar the priests, and that was the way that Ahithophel counseled Absalom and the older men of Israel, and this and that was the way that I myself counseled. And now, send speedily and tell David, saying, "Do not lodge in the desert plains of the wilderness tonight, but you also ought to cross over without fail, for fear that the king and all the people that are with him may be swallowed up." As Jonathan and Ahimaaz were standing at Enrogel, a maidservant went off and told them. So they themselves went off, as they had to tell King David, for they were not able to appear entering the city. However, a young man got to see them and told Absalom. So the two of them went off speedily and came to the house of a man in Bahurim, who had a well in his courtyard, and they went down into it. After that, the woman took and spread out a screen over the face of the well and heaped up cracked grain upon it. And not a thing became known of it. The servants of Absalom now came to the woman at her house and said, "Where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" At this the woman said to them, "They passed on from here to the waters." Then they kept on searching, and they did not find them, and so returned to Jerusalem. And it came about after their going away that then they came up out of the well and went on and told King David and said to David, "You people, rise up and speedily pass over the waters, for this is the way that Ahithophel counseled against you." Immediately David rose and also all the people that were with him, and they kept crossing the Jordan until the morning became light, until not a one was lacking that had not passed over the Jordan. As for Ahithophel, he saw that his counsel had not been acted upon, and he proceeded to saddle an ass and rise up and go off to his house at his own city. Then he gave commands to his household and strangled himself and thus died. So he was buried in the burial place of his forefathers, a tragic end for Ahithophel. As for David, he came to Mahanaim, and Absalom himself crossed the Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him, and Amasa was the one whom Absalom put in place of Joab over the army, and Amasa was the son of a man whose name was Ithra the Israelite, who had relations with Abigail the daughter of Nahash, the sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. And Israel and Absalom took up camping in the land of Gilead. And it came about that as soon as David came to Mahanaim, Shobi the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the sons of Ammon, and Machir the son of Amiel from Lodibar, and Barzillai the Gileadite from Rogelim, brought beds and basins and potter's vessels, and wheat and barley and flour and roasted grain, and broad beans and lentils and parched grain, and honey and butter and sheep and curds of cattle they brought forward for David and the people that were with him to eat. For they said, "The people are hungry and tired and thirsty in the wilderness." And that's the end of 2 Samuel chapter 17. We sure do, and certainly do, learn a lot about King David in these books of Samuel. Do we not? It's remarkable. Is it not? But now, we're about to read the very last chapter of the book of Jeremiah. It's not the longest chapter. It's a very important chapter, and it's it includes a summary of the number of the people taken exile from Jerusalem within it as well, later on in this chapter. Here we go. Zedekiah, in Jeremiah chapter 52, verse 1, Zedekiah was 21 years old when he began to reign, and for 11 years he reigned in Jerusalem. Did I see that? Let me just think. What does it say? in the study version. 21 years old. 11 years he reigned in Jerusalem. Okay. And the name of his mother was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. And he continued to do what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. No, Jehoiakim had preceded his own son, who only ruled for a short period of time. So he essentially preceded Zedekiah, and he also ruled for about 11 years. For on account of the anger of Jehovah, it occurred in Jerusalem and in Judah, until he had cast them out from before his face. And Zedekiah proceeded to rebel against the king of Babylon. Finally, it came about in the ninth year of his being king, in the tenth month, on the tenth day of the month, about in January of that year, which is about 18 months prior to the destruction of Jerusalem, that Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, came, he and all his military force, against Jerusalem. And they began to camp against her and to build against her a siege wall all around. So the city and the king came under siege until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. So we know, you know, Zedekiah ruled 10 years and some months. In the fourth month, on the ninth day of the month, the famine also got to be severe in the city, and there proved to be no bread for the people of the land. Finally, the city was broken through. It doesn't say what date the city was broken through, though. It could have been that day, but it wasn't, we're going to see, until a little bit later, in the fifth month, when the city was burned. And as regards all the men of war, they began to run away after the city was broken through, and go forth from the city by night by the way of the gate between the double wall that is by the king's garden, while the Chaldeans were all around against the city. And they kept going by the way of the Arabah, these men who were fleeing. And a military force of the Chaldeans went chasing after the king, and they got to overtake Zedekiah in the desert plains of Jericho. And all his own military force was scattered from his side. That would mean King Zedekiah, from his side. Then they seized the king, that would be King Zedekiah, and brought him up to the king of Babylon at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might pronounce upon him judicial decisions. And the king of Babylon proceeded to slaughter the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, king of Babylon being Nebuchadnezzar, and also all the princes of Judah he slaughtered in Riblah. And the eyes of Zedekiah he blinded, after which the king of Babylon bound him with copper fetters and brought him to Babylon and put him in the custody, in the house of custody, until the day of his death. And here it is, verse 12, and in the fifth month, on the tenth day of the month. Now, it was actually, according to the Jewish tradition, the ninth day of Av, when the temple was burned, right? So, but it's called the tenth day here. In the ninth day, they said, was a Saturday. That's the other thing. On both occasions when the temple was burned, it was a Saturday and it was the ninth of Av, in both cases, according to Jewish tradition. Now, that occurs correctly in the year 587 BCE, and also in the year that the Jews say, which is 422 BCE, which can't be correct, we don't think, according to the other things we know about chronology. But at least Av 9 is a Saturday for them in 422, as it is for the generally accepted chronology of 587, which is in our chronology, the genealogy. It's true that Av 9 is a Saturday. That is, in the 19th year of King Nebuchadrezzar, which is 587. Right? Which is, it's the 19th counting from 18 years from 605 when he took the throne. His first official year, of course, was 604, which is why some accounts say the 18th year. And so it's quite consistent here. It's the year 587. The king of Babylon, Nebuchadrezzar, or Nebuchadnezzar, as he's also called, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, in that year, who was standing before the king of Babylon, came into Jerusalem. So that's when they entered Jerusalem, even though the city had already fallen. But that was when the chief of the bodyguard came into the city, even though the city was broken through finally. So, okay, so it doesn't say the date the city was broken through, so apparently it was not until the fifth month. The famine was severe in the fourth month, on the ninth day of the month, but in the fifth month they broke through, at least by that time. And he proceeded, this Nebuzaradan, to burn the house of Jehovah and the house of the king and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great house he burned with fire. So evidently the fire started on the ninth and didn't end until the tenth. And all the walls of Jerusalem, that was the fifth month of Av, in the 11th year of Zedekiah, which was 587 BCE, and all the walls of Jerusalem round about, all the military forces of the Chaldeans that were with the chief of the bodyguard pulled down. They pulled down the walls of Jerusalem. Verse 14. And some of the lowly ones of the people and the rest of the people that were left remaining in the city, and the deserters that had fallen away to the king of Babylon, and the rest of the master workmen, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, took into exile. And some of the lowly ones of the land, Nebuzaradan, excuse me, I have not been pronouncing that correctly all my life. Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, let remain as vine dressers and as compulsory laborers. Some of the lowly ones of the land he let remain. And the copper pillars that belonged to the house of Jehovah belonged, past tense, and the carriages and the copper sea that was in the house of Jehovah, the Chaldeans, broke to pieces and went carrying all the copper of them to Babylon. We're losing time here. We've got to move quickly. And the cans and the shovels and the extinguishers and the bowls and the cups and all the copper utensils with which they used to minister they took. And the basins, these are all the utensils of the temple, and the fire holders and the bowls and the cans and the lampstands and the cups and the bowls that were of genuine gold and those that were of genuine silver, the chief of the bodyguard took. And the two pillars, the one sea and the 12 copper bowls that were under the sea, the carriages that King Solomon had made for the house of Jehovah. There happened to be no weight taken of a copper of them, all these articles. And as regards the pillars, 18 cubits in height was each pillar, and a thread of 12 cubits. Divide by 3, you get about 4 cubits in diameter. Pi being about 3, and the diameter, pi times the diameter being the circumference of a circle. So it's about 4 cubits, or, you know, 6 feet diameter, roughly, it sounds like. And its thickness was 4 finger breadths, it being hollow. It depends on the size of the cubit, too. And using the accurate number for pi also would make a different number. Its thickness was 4 finger breadths, it being hollow, these columns. And the capital upon it was of copper, and the height of the one capital was 5 cubits. It's about 5 times 18 inches, or, you know, 1.5, about 7.5 feet. And as regards the network and the pomegranates upon the capital all around, the whole was of copper, and the second pillar had just the same as these, also the pomegranates. And the pomegranates came to be 96 on the sides, all the pomegranates being 100 upon the network round about. Furthermore, the chief of the bodyguard took Sariah the chief priest, and Zephaniah the second priest, and the 3 doorkeepers. And from the city he took 1 court official that happened to be commissioner over the men of war, and 7 men of those having access to the king who were found in the city, and the secretary of the chief of the army, the one mustering the people of the land, and 60 men of the people of the land who were found in the midst of the city. So these Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, took and conducted them to the king of Babylon at Riblah. And these the king of Babylon proceeded to strike down and to put them to death in Riblah in the land of Hamath. Thus Judah went into exile from off its soil. These are the people whom Nebuchadrezzar took into exile in the 7th year. Now that would be his actual 7th year from 604, which, since it occurred at the turn of the year, it's before the end of the year, 3,023 Jews, but that's the year, 7 years after 604, which is 597. Year 7 of Nebuchadnezzar. And in the 18th year of Nebuchadrezzar, and so now we're using the actual year 1 as 604, from Jerusalem there were 832 souls when they destroyed Jerusalem. In the 23rd year of Nebuchadrezzar, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the bodyguard, took Jews into exile, 745 souls. All the souls were 4,600. At length it came about in the 37th year of the exile of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, from 597. Subtract 36, you get 561, which is the year when Nebuchadnezzar died, 43 years after 604. In the 12th month, on the 25th day of the month, that evil Merodach, the king of Babylon, in the year of his becoming king, that was when Nebuchadnezzar died. His predecessor died. Raised up the head, did evil Merodach, of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, and proceeded to bring him forth from the prison house. He was the son of Jehoiakim. And he began to speak with him good things, and to put his throne higher than the thrones of the other kings that were with him in Babylon. And he took off his prison garments, and he ate bread before him constantly all the days of his life. And as for his allowance, there was a constant allowance given him from the king of Babylon daily as due until the day of his death, all the days of his life. That's the end of Jeremiah, the book of Jeremiah, and chapter 2. That concludes the book of Jeremiah, little ones. We've read that much. Matthew, chapter 26. Now, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, this is a long chapter, he said to his disciples, you know that 2 days from now the Passover occurs. And notice the 2 days from now, and the Son of Man is to be delivered up to be impaled. Because we talked about the fact that there's the Essene Passover, then the Sadducee, then the Pharisee. So 2 days from now the Passover occurs. It's fascinating that it mentions that. Then the chief priests and the older men of the people gathered together in the courtyard of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and took counsel together to seize Jesus by crafty device and kill him. However, they kept saying, not at the festival. There's another important thing. They couldn't kill him at the festival, partly because it was illegal to do it on day one of the festival, but also, you know, so they'd have to do it either before the festival, and because they didn't want to do it during the festival, in order that no uproar may arise among the people. Verse 5, while Jesus happened to be in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman with an alabaster case of costly perfumed oil approached him. And she began pouring it upon his head as he was reclining at the table. On seeing this, the disciples became indignant and said, why this waste? For this could have been sold for a great deal and been given to poor people. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, why do you try to make trouble for the woman? For she did a fine deed toward me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. For when this woman put this perfumed oil upon my body, she did it for the preparation of me for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever this good news is preached in all the world, what this woman did shall also be told as a remembrance of her. Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, what will you give me to betray him to you? They stipulated to him 30 silver pieces. So from then on he kept seeking a good opportunity to betray him. On the first day of the unfermented cakes, and that also has a footnote, which says on the day before, is another possible translation of this, because of John 1, 15 and 30, where it says he existed before me, the same usage of that word is given. The Greek word protos can mean the day before the unfermented cakes, which makes perfect sense in the context. The disciples came up to Jesus because of what we said about him. He must have died the day before the Passover, the day before the first day of Passover. So the disciples came up to Jesus on this day before the day of the unfermented cakes, at least the day before the Sadducee Passover, right? But it was the day of the Essene Passover that evening. In our article, Born and Raised, we talk about that. And his disciples said to Jesus, where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover, they said, on this day before the festival of unfermented cakes. He said, go into the city of to so-and-so and say to him, the teacher says, go into the city of Jerusalem to so-and-so and say to him, the teacher says, my appointed time is near. I will celebrate the Passover with my disciples at your home. And the disciples did as Jesus ordered them, and they got things ready for the Passover. When now it had become evening, he was reclining at the table with the 12 disciples. While they were eating, he said, truly I say to you, one of you will betray me. Being very much grieved at this, they commenced each and every one to say to him, Lord, it is not I, is it? In reply, he said, he that dips his hand with me in the bowl is the one that will betray me. True, the Son of Man is going away, just as it is written concerning him. But woe to that man through whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been finer for him if that man had not been born. By way of reply, Judas, who was about to betray him, said, It is not I, is it, Rabbi? He said to him, You yourself said it. As they continued eating, Jesus took a loaf, and after saying a blessing, he broke it, and giving it to the disciples, he said, Take, eat. This means my body. Also, he took a cup, and after having given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, Drink out of it, all of you, for this means my blood of the covenant, which is to be poured out in behalf of many for forgiveness of sins. But I tell you, I will by no means drink henceforth any of this product of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in the kingdom of my Father. Finally, after singing praises, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, All of you will be stumbled in connection with me on this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered about. It's from Zechariah 13 and 7. Strike the shepherd, and let those of the flock be scattered. But after I have been raised up, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. But Peter in answer said to him, Although all the others are stumbled in connection with you, never will I be stumbled. Jesus said to him, Truly I say to you, on this night before a cock crows, you will disown me three times. Peter said to him, Even if I should have to die with you, I will by no means disown you. All the other disciples also said the same thing. Then Jesus came with them to the spot called Gethsemane. And he said to the disciples, Sit down here while I go over there and pray. And taking along Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, the same disciples who went with him to see the transfiguration, he started to be grieved and to be sorely troubled. Then he said to them, My soul is deeply grieved, even to death. Stay here and keep on the watch with me. And going a little way forward, he fell upon his face. Imagine how troubled he must have been if he fell upon his face. Couldn't even stay upright. Praying and saying, My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass away from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will. And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, Could you men not so much as watch 1 hour with me? Keep on the watch and pray continually that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit, of course, is eager, but the flesh is weak. Again, for the second time, he went off and prayed, saying, My Father, if it is not possible for this to pass away, except I drink it, let your will take place. And he came again and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them, he again went off and prayed for the third time, saying once more the same word. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, At such a time as this you are sleeping and taking your rest. Look, the hour has drawn near for the Son of Man to be betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us go. Look, my betrayer has drawn near. And while he was yet speaking, look, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the older men of the people. Now his betrayer had given them a sign, saying, Whoever it is I kiss, this is he, take him into custody. And going straight up to Jesus, he said, Good day, Rabbi, and kissed him very tenderly. But Jesus said to him, Fellow, for what purpose are you present? Then they came forward and laid hands on Jesus and took him into custody. But look, one of those with Jesus reached out his hand and drew his sword and struck the slave of the high priest and took off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, Return your sword to its place, for all those who take the sword will perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father to supply me at this moment more than 12 legions of angels? In that case, how would the scriptures be fulfilled that it must take place this way? In that hour, Jesus said to the crowds, Have you come out with swords and clubs as against a robber to arrest me? Day after day I used to sit in the temple teaching, and yet you did not take me into custody. But all this has taken place for the scriptures of the prophets to be fulfilled. Then all the disciples abandoned him and fled. Those who took Jesus into custody led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and the older men were gathered together. But Peter kept following him at a good distance as far as the courtyard of the high priest, and after going inside, he was sitting with the house attendants to see the outcome. Meantime, the chief priests and the entire Sanhedrin were looking for false witness against Jesus in order to put him to death, but they found none, although many false witnesses came forward. Later on, two came forward and said, This man said, I am able to throw down the temple of God and build it up in 3 days. With that, the high priest stood up and said to him, Have you no answer? What is it these are testifying against you? But Jesus kept silent. So the high priest said to him, By the living God, I put you under oath to tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, You yourself said it. Yet I say to you men, from henceforth you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest ripped his outer garment, saying, He has blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? See, now you have heard the blasphemy. What is your opinion? They returned answer, He is liable to death. Then they spit into his face and hit him with their fists. Others slapped him in the face, saying, Prophesy to us, you Christ. Who is it that struck you? Now Peter was standing outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came up to him, saying, You too were with Jesus the Galilean. But he denied it before them all, saying, I do not know what you were talking about. After he had gone out to the gatehouse, another girl noticed him and said to those there, This man was with Jesus the Nazarene. And again he denied it with an oath, I do not know the man. After a little while, those standing around came up and said to Peter, Certainly you also are one of them, for in fact your dialect gives you away. Then he started to curse and swear, I do not know the man. And immediately a cock crowed. And Peter called to mind the saying Jesus spoke, namely, before a cock crows, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. We've gone over time. It is December 18th, 2023. The time is 15:14 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. And this is Gully, my wind-up watch, and Cassie, my very faithful digital watch, who she costs a lot less than Gully does, on my behalf saying bye for now.